TED Audio Collective.
Hi, everyone. We're so excited to share another episode of Fixable with you today. This is going to be a great one.
Absolutely. But before we dive in, we have a bit of housekeeping. We're going on summer break, otherwise known as why I became an academic.
The whole reason to take the job. But don't worry, we'll be sharing some great episodes in the feed while we're gone so you can get a taste of some of the shows we think you're going to love while we're away.
And we'll be back in August with more episodes of Fixable.
When we return, we'll tackle everything from how to collaborate in a high-conflict environment to how to set boundaries at work as a founder with Gina Gutierrez of the audio erotica company Dipsy, to how to keep robots from taking your job with the hilarious best-selling author A.J. Jacobs.
Spoiler alert, I'm not too worried about that last one.
I don't know if you should get comfortable, Francis.
But yes, we will have all that and more.
We're so excited to bring you a whole slate of new problems and solutions. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Now let's get into today's episode. Welcome to Fixable. I'm Ann Morris. I'm a company builder and leadership coach.
And I'm Frances Fry. I'm a professor at the Harvard Business School, and I'm Ann's wife.
On this show, we believe that meaningful change happens fast, anything is fixable, and solutions are often just a single conversation away. So our caller today is Rechma Saujani. She's the founder of Girls Who Code and Moms First. And she just gave a commencement speech at Smith College that has now gone viral.
What caused it to go viral? What was it about?
Well, one of the themes that she went after was imposter syndrome. She was really challenging the idea that women are responsible for their experience of feeling like imposters in some situation. You have a framing on imposter syndrome that you sometimes offer people.
Yeah. So the headline is that imposter syndrome is when there is a disconnect between objectively how awesome I am and subjectively how awesome I think I am. And imposter syndrome is when objectively I'm awesome, but subjectively I don't think I'm awesome. And I'll just give you a teaser for how to overcome it, which is to just focus on how many people who are objectively not that awesome, but subjectively think they're awesome. That's the opposite of imposter syndrome. And that's not called like any catchy name of imposter syndrome. That's like the Dunning-Kruger effect or something, so that nobody will go and double click on it. But I find that as the first step to overcoming imposter syndrome, realize how many people are doing that.
That is a theme Rechma touches on in the course of the speech.
Yeah. Oh, good.
And by the way, we don't know much about Rechma's problem for today, except that it has something to do with the challenges of being a second-time founder.
Oh, it can be so tough to start from scratch again.
Absolutely. I'll be curious to hear where Rechma is feeling that tension. And I'm also interested in what's underneath it, if there isn't something else at the root of her frustration.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
Welcome to Fixable, Reshma. We're thrilled to have you.
Thanks for having me.
What can we help you with today?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, well, I mean, I think the most pressing issue facing me right now is it's hard to be a second-time founder. I left Girls Who Code about 2 years ago because I was ready to pass the baton, and I passed it to my dear friend who was our COO, Dr. Tarika Barrett. And my work of building a stable organization was done. I had built the organization and then had to rebuild it during COVID. So I had done it twice, right?
Do you feel like you made the handoff for Girls Who Code at the right time?
Was it too late? No, it wasn't too late. It was exactly the right time. It was also because at that time, it was starting to become clear to me that I taught hundreds of thousands of girls, non-binary trans kids, and they still didn't hire them 10 years later. And I realized, this is not about a pipeline. This is about the fact that we have to literally smash the patriarchy inside of technology companies. And to do that where 99% of your funding comes from corporates, to be that voice that is disrupting from the inside became harder to do. And I knew I could do it more effectively as a founder, than as a CEO, because I thought that that was the next iteration of our work.
Yep. And now I want to get into that. So then tell us what you're doing now.
Well, I'm building my next movement, Moms First. And it's to finish the fight for gender equality once and for all.
Wow.
Moms First is a national nonprofit organization that's transforming our workplaces, our government, and our culture to enable moms to thrive in America. And we do that by engaging the private sector to create workplaces that finally work for women. And we do it by organizing moms to advocate for what they need at home, at work, and at communities. And my big KPI there is to win paid leave and childcare in as many communities, spaces, and places as I can by 2027.
So I want to get into the theory of change. Tell me how you're starting the movement.
So I guess background, the United States is the only industrialized nation that doesn't offer paid leave. 40% of parents are in debt because of the cost of childcare. Moms make 58 cents on every dollar made by dads. So what happens is, if you think about the trajectory of a young woman in America today, she's born, she's probably her high school valedictorian. She crushes it in college. She's recruited by every single company when she graduates college. She may even buy her own apartment. But the minute when she decides to become a mother, everything changes. From that moment onward, her financial trajectory shifts. Her opportunity for upward mobility shifts. Her health shifts. Her mental health shifts. And part of that is because we have, or I would say all of it is because we have a broken structure of care. Because we live in a nation that doesn't offer paid leave and that doesn't make childcare affordable and that pays women inequitably for doing the same work as men, mothers, I should say.
Great. Super compelling problem that you have set out to solve. So where does Moms First fit into the solution?
So my goal is to get every single company to subsidize childcare for their hourly workers and their salaried workers. So right now, less than 6% of companies offer some sort of childcare support. The government has basically pretty much said, we're not doing anything about it. So we've launched this National Business Coalition on Childcare to get companies to basically raise their hand and say, we're going to be providing childcare benefits and you should too. So we have companies from Etsy to a Patagonia who are basically helping us shift the business narrative on this.
You have two moms on the line who are very sympathetic. And I just want to crawl into the skull-sized kingdom inside your head. And where is the tension point? And one of them is that you thought it would be
easier to raise money
than it is.
Absolutely. Okay. It should have been easier to raise money. It should have been hey guys, I got another idea. And I know how to do
whatever you want, Reshma.
Whatever it is.
Blank check.
Send me the check, right? And so I think that in many ways has been more challenging. When I was Girls Who Code, founder, CEO, year one and two, where when you did have that call with a billion-dollar philanthropist and you walked away being like, they're going to give me $1 million. And now I'm like, you're not going to give me a damn thing, are you? You know what I mean? And I think the second thing that's so interesting to me is the problem I'm solving right now is bigger than the one I was solving at Girls Who Code.
Yeah, it has. It's more complicated.
It's more complicated.
It's more personal for a lot of people.
Yeah, and it's so clearly unjust. Think about it. If we live in a nation that is forcing birth right now, if you don't have paid leave or affordable childcare, you're pushing people in, you're forcing them to have children to push them into poverty. And it is an endless cycle, right? And so people don't totally see that.
What percentage of the fundraising challenge do you attribute to that piece?
That's a great question. Well, they're so interconnected, aren't they? I mean, to me, it's about the fact that we don't invest in women and girls. And we certainly don't invest in women and girls' issues that we don't fully understand. I'll give you that. That could be leading to some of the fundraising issues, right? Because the impact of what I'm talking about takes a minute to process. And I think naively, I thought when I had my aha moment about paid leave and childcare and said, oh, I got to step down at Girls Who Code to go solve this. It was so clear to me in my head that I thought it would be clear to everybody, but it hasn't been. So it is about messaging.
Well, I want to say one thing, and then I want to invite my wife in to say something, but I don't want to lose this thought. So I'm jumping a little bit ahead, I think, but there's that obnoxious truism that, you know, happiness or satisfaction is measured by the difference between our reality and our expectations. And I almost want to take Girls Who Code out of the storyline right now, because I feel like this is a really different kind of movement that's going to have its own arc. It's going to have its own plot points. It's going to have its own interesting, unexpected pivots. And it's going to end up in a really different place. But the closer you're holding, the more tightly you're holding on to the Girls Who Code ride in the sense of this constant variance story that's running through your head. At this moment, we were doing this, and then we did this. And of course, because that's the recent experience you're bringing to this, I almost feel like it's harder for it to have the freedom to kind of take its own ride.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. See, like in my heart, I laugh because I think people, like, even for me, still hold on to the Girls Who Code title and like not the Moms First piece. You know what I mean? I had this moment, I think, a few months ago where I kind of like, oh, wait, it's not the same playbook. You know what I mean? It's a different playbook. And it's just understanding people. Even something simple of like, you know, it's easier to get money to invest in girls' issues than women's issues because especially
girls
for
are
men.
So cute.
So cute, so sweet.
We get so messy as we get older. Frances, tell me where your beautiful mind is going.
I love the conversation. I think that there is something in the difference between Moms First and Girls Who Code. So I'm going to say something about that. And then I think there's a lot in the framing. And I think some small tweaks in the framing could make a big difference. But on the difference, you know, I could imagine giving money for Girls Who Code, and I'm giving enough money so that 10 girls can code or 20 girls can code. But for Moms First, I'm giving money for so three companies can adopt the benefits, because my money isn't subsidizing the benefits. It's subsidizing the communication channel to get people to do it. So it's indirect versus direct. And I think that's just a totally different game. So on the difference to me, that's the main difference, is that I'm funding something indirectly as opposed to directly. Mm-hmm. On the framing, I, as Anne said, I love the title of Girls Who Code. It stands on its own. Moms First doesn't. You would have to explain what it is. This isn't the right name, but it's something like Companies Who Care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we want, you know, do you want to be a company who cares? Which has both parts of care, right? You're caring and it's for the care of children. Now, that meets my literal needs. You'll come up with something else. But I think your framing challenge is big enough that to have the title not be self-evident is probably a bridge too far. Girls Who Code satisfies all of that, all of it, like, which is why you'll get a standing ovation. You'll get stopped on the street. It satisfies all of it. To me, it is, I'm looking for indirect help. And I might have given myself a framing challenge along the way.
Well, we were called Marshall Plan for Moms. Talk about that being. So we changed it to Moms First. But I think I didn't get to describe all the things we do because it's not just the companies. I mean, the other piece is we're building a movement of moms. But you are right. It's a broader thing. You know, girls code, we're teaching girls to code. And these were the ways that we're doing it. Here, it's
fund
like
10 girls.
I can fund 10 girls. It's a bigger advocacy play.
And I didn't know what it was when we, just by reading everything, I couldn't quite get it. And so it did require a conversation with you, which isn't scalable.
It's not. Yeah. This is like professor at the Harvard Business School who read the materials and wasn't totally sure where you were going.
And
So what I think we're circling, and I think it's bigger than the literal name of the organization. I think it's a beautiful contrast to Girls Who Code, right? Because that one is just so intuitive. It is about how do you tell this story for a broader audience?
I really appreciate it. I love you too, because this is what I've been struggling with. And I know this as a communicator. We're not fully there yet. And I think one of the things that is missing is the storytelling, right? Like I probably threw out 50 facts. People are like, yeah, blah, blah, right? But what are the stories? And I think part of the problem is the stories I would be telling right now is my life in raising a 3-year-old and an 8-year-old and the struggles that I have, even as someone who's privileged and who has childcare, but it's also messy. And if I feel this way, imagine if you're someone who works at Walmart and you make $30,000. You know what I mean? It's like...
But Reshma, listen to the assets you went through on this call, which is that you have moms flocking to you to say, here's my story. Like one of the things that you are going to have as you build this movement is a resonance of stories and storytelling that is so far beyond the Girls Who Code story. So how do you operationalize that? How do you collect those stories? How do you figure out which ones are going to really be the ones that unlock this in the American imagination, in the global imagination, because you are diagnosing a problem at the scale of the entire planet.
It's also like part of the struggle that I think I feel like is like we have lost our connection with having empathy over these stories. And maybe that's, and so I got to find a way to not just tell stories, but to tell stories in a way that is going to make you be like, that's wrong.
You know, if I think about, like you mentioned Walmart, because they're the largest employer in the US, I think. What would be required for them to be able to do this? Because if you can figure out how they can do it, you can figure out how everyone else in between. So what would it take to be the business case for that organization? And if you had to prepare that story and refine that one, I think you've sold it for everyone else. But I have to say that the business case of saying yes isn't immediately apparent to me. And so...
And tell me why. Like, tell me what you would like need to know.
Because I can totally see the extra expense. And what's my immediate payoff? Is it going to help me get more employees? Like if they're not having a recruiting problem, is it going to keep? I mean, if it's going to reduce turnover,
it's going to reduce turnover.
Yeah. So if you can do that, and it can say, here's how much it's going to reduce turnover, and I like to think, what are you willing to guarantee? And that to me is the best thing. We guarantee it will pay for itself with reduced turnover, and then ask them to do a pilot. Great. We'll just do it in this region. And if it doesn't pay for itself in reduced turnover, then you don't have to adopt it for the rest of the organization. They're so empirically oriented. But I do think that that's where it would be for me. The expense I'm going to incur on day one, how long is it going to get for me to see and feel the benefit?
And that's it. There's not enough data in this. Like, even you know,
do a pilot at a company. Yeah. Do a pilot at Walmart.
Yeah, Walmart, which is the largest employer of women.
Yeah. 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 I mean, my suspicion is this is the stickiest benefit. And Patagonia has already done, I mean, I'm curious what the Patagonia data is around.
It's phenomenal.
I can imagine, yeah.
But we need a bigger set. So there are companies who've been providing either backup care or on-site daycare and even subsidies, you know, for a long enough for us to say, pull me back the data for the past, you know, 5 years.
I know at Harvard Business School has daycare on campus. And with the exception of the fact that it takes a long time to get off the waiting list, it's a total perk. And it's a total perk for women. And then and the men love it too. But it's a necessity for that, that you can get the kids before
and
after.
And you're not leaving your daycare. You're like, that's the hard, you know what I mean? Your
hell
kid
no.
Likes me, like,
I love that it's that we're even tolerating a waiting list. Reshma, I hear you typing in the background. Can you tell us what you've been writing down?
Well, I think the first thing I wrote is, how do you tell this story? And, you know, how do you operationalize it? And how do you share it? And this is a conversation I've been having with my team. I mean, I really think it is about continuing to workshop the message and the clarity of what it is that I'm doing and trying to change and how I'm trying to make that change. I think it is a constant body of work. And I have to be okay with that.
And I think the goal is to understand deeply so that you can describe it simply, so yeah, it's understood in your absence.
I love that.
And I think that's where we want it to come alive, is in your absence.
Reshma, it was such a pleasure to meet you.
You're awesome.
You're amazing.
You guys are awesome.
And we're rooting for you. And if there's anything we can do to be helpful, please do not be shy.
You will be on my speed dial. Thank you. This was great.
Francis, where's your head?
Going in all honesty, because I didn't understand what it was, it made me, if I had to guess going in, I was like, maybe she's not doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not at all what I think. I think she's doing exactly the right thing. And it's a communication challenge, I think, at the end. But my goodness, am I inspired by people who want to make a difference in Oregon, work on behalf of all of us. But I am. Children first, companies who care, listeners, feel free to send in additional names.
Yeah, I was coming in thinking that we were going to be crafting the right role for her. And within 10 minutes of hearing her talk, I was 100% persuaded she was in the right job, chasing the right dream. I do find myself thinking about how our previous roles and experiences can sometimes haunt us.
Yeah.
In creating an expectation that just gets in the way of what,
you know,
the present moment.
I remember when I was a graduate student at Wharton, and a crazy sequence of events, I ended up needing to teach a class, a faculty member. And I taught the class and it went very well. And I went in and did it and I loved it. I was terrified to go in the classroom the next year because I was going in having, you know, I won a bunch of teaching awards. And now I had all this pressure from no one else, but I was really nervous about doing it the second time. Now, once I did it the second time, then I never had nerves again, because it can go well, it can not.
Mm.
But doing something on the back of success is much harder than just doing it, which is quite counterintuitive. And so having created like one of the most amazing not-for-profits on the planet, to do it from that kind of success, I'm so excited that she's taking the swing. She's, you know, she's doing it. And when she said she talks about bravery and courage, I think it takes both of those things.
Thanks for listening, everyone. This is our last episode before summer break, but we'll be back in August with a whole new batch of episodes.
Fixable is brought to you by the TED Audio Collective. It's hosted by me, Francis Fry.
And me, Anne Morris. Our team includes Isabel Carter, Constanza Gallardo, Lydia Jean Cott, Sarah Nix, Jimmy Gutierrez, Michelle Quint, Corey Hagem, Alejandra Salazar, Ban Ban Chang, and Roxanne Highlash. Jake Gorski is our mix engineer.
If you're enjoying the show, make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And tell a friend to check us out.
And one more thing. If you can, please take a second to leave us a review. It really helps us make a great show.
And it totally helps the search algorithm.